Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 18 of season 4. This one is called Identity Crisis. It was directed by Weinrich Kolbe. Teleplay goes to Brandon Braga, his first solo script. And the story goes to Timothy DeHaas. It aired back on March 25th, 1991. In this one, Geordi meets an old friend, and he discovers that he's been infected with an alien parasite that slowly transforms him into an alien. It's called Identity Crisis. Me, Sean, and Clay are going to talk about this one right after this.
Captain Picard's wrong. The way to handle this is to get back down there with a dozen away teams, fan out from the shuttle. We can cover a lot of ground in a hurry. Use proximity detectors, infrared sensors.
Susanna.
Oh, Geordi, it started. What if what happened to the others is happening to me?
You don't know that. Suze. I'm here. And I'm not gonna let anything happen to you, okay? Okay. Come on.
Clay, if I had to guess, I would think that you liked this episode in concept. Is that right?
I don't know. Am I way off?
Am I way off?
Well, I liked it. I liked it when Geordi turned into the Predator for some reason. So what I did like about it, not to go off right away, is I thought it was a good use of the holodeck, although a completely unrealistic one. So I thought the holodeck stuff was kind of interesting, but I don't know. I didn't love it.
It continues the thing of they have a terrible episode in season 3 called Matter of Perspective, where Riker's put on trial and they use the holodeck to recreate the murder scene.
Yeah,
I always thought that is the best use of the holodeck is to solve a mystery, like to recreate a scene, and like because you have so many. I really love that scene in this episode. Like, Geordi kind of comes off as half brain dead because it takes him so long to put together what he's actually looking at. But outside of that, I really enjoy using the holodeck to solve something.
Yeah.
I agree.
Actually,
Sorry,
I didn't mean to cut you off. I think the thing that really didn't do it for me, I was watching it with my girlfriend. She actually pointed it out, and it clicked as soon as she said it, is that Geordi actually doesn't do anything in this. Nothing he does serves any purpose.
No.
Because nothing he does helps solve the problem or anything. It's just that the woman wakes up and she's like, oh, no, I know everything that's going on. We should go get Geordi off the plane. It's like he goes through all this stuff, and it's for absolutely no reason.
Yes. It's I'll say this, and then I'll let you talk, Sean. I think the ending to this episode is terrible. It's like such a waste of everything that came before it. It's clearly they had this idea. They had no idea how to bring it home. Sean, what'd you think of this one?
I don't like monster episodes. I've just a personal preference of mine. I don't like when people suddenly morph into other things. I don't see the science behind it. I can't suspend my imagination enough to feel like that could actually happen.
Yep.
But I did like the costumes. I liked when, you know, he had like the glowing Marilyn Manson eyes and blue electric veins.
I liked it up until especially the shot where he beams off and you barely see him for a second. Once you start seeing too much of the costume, it's like, I wish they hadn't shown us this constantly like this.
Yeah, but when he's hugging her. I don't know. It's just weird.
The number one question that's been asked about every movie monster since the beginning of time is, does the costume look terrible and should we show it?
Yes. Yeah. And in this one, they put a lot of work into the makeup, like when they're turning into the monsters, and then eventually it's just a guy wearing a spandex onesie.
Yeah. I don't know how Geordi has ended up in friend zone with this chick.
Hey, I wanted to get into this. What happened to Geordi where he's suddenly confident around women in this episode.
So my favorite thing about this, I don't know if they probably didn't mean to do this, but that scene that where they're together and she's like, oh, what happened to the Geordi that used to ask me girl advice? And he's like, well, you know, you break it, you bought it or something. And
No, but
right. I was like, wait a minute. Are they blaming Geordi's creepiness on this woman? So like, wait. was there a point where he's like, so, how should I go talk to this girl? And she's like, God damn, Geordi, just go make them on the holodeck. All right.
Yes.
But he says to her, well, I don't need your help anymore. Or like, oh, obviously you were a good teacher. He says something that to the effect that he's over those insecurity problems.
No, he says
clearly not.
He says he's enjoying the bachelor lifestyle too much. It's like, okay. What are you talking about?
I'm enjoying being in jail. You don't have a choice.
I couldn't tell if that was supposed to be a joke or if the writing was just so unaware of what the character did two episodes ago that they're like, he's a cool guy. This is a cool fucking guy right there. Yeah, that was a weird line. That was a weird It's a weird relationship Geordi has in this one. I do want to give one bit of trivia about this. This is the first solo script by Brennan Braga, which is kind of remarkable. Right. Braga is going to go on to be the co-writer or writer of the most Star Trek episodes of all time.
Wow.
Creator of Seven of Nine.
Yep. Creator of Enterprise and showrunner on Voyager.
The ex-best friend of Ron Moore who went to Battlestar.
Well, they seem okay now at this point, I think, with all the... Unless everything I've seen of them has come previously and there was something upsetting after that.
I think you're right.
Braga gets a kind of... The kind of thing about Braga is that he's seen by fans as his episodes are very high concept. He writes Cause and Effect is one of his. The one where the ship blows up repeatedly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that one.
I think he writes Parallels. He writes a bunch of other ones. Schisms, which is another sort of high concept episode. So my weakness, I guess, is that I love high concept episodes of Star Trek. He's kind of in my wheelhouse, even though he gets sort of flack about it, which I think is undeserved. But I think that this one is kind of a pinnacle idea of Braga just because it's a clearly a high concept that he has trouble maintaining all the way through. There's a portion here where Geordi's working in engineering that is so pointless and slow that it's distracting to me.
Yeah.
Then he eventually gets to the holodeck, and then he gets down on the planet, and it's slow again because they have no idea how to wrap this story up.
Are you talking about the scene that's literally him watching video for 8 minutes?
No, it's even before that, but that's a part of it. There's a part where he's like reclining against the warp drive saying, like, what am I going to do? What are we going to do? And it's just like, what are you going to do, Geordi? How about you pull it together? You know what I loved about this episode? The use of videotape from the past.
I thought at first that it was going to be a found footage episode, and I was like, oh, wow, that's really ahead of its time.
It would have been cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was the strongest thing here was the footage, the camera perspective and reenacting it. And I love the holodeck as a crime scene tool, like what Wes was saying before. I think that's really – I would watch Star Trek CSI if they had it.
Yes, everything.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah.
Everything's on there.
Yeah.
It's creepy. That's a creepy scene. You know, the past
when he goes, computer, please delete Geordi. And I'm thinking, oh, God, I wish that was true. Delete both of them.
The computer's very aware of what's going on.
Roll credits.
I like that scene. It's creepy as hell. It's unfortunate that you get to see the weird plotness of Beverly Crusher's like, all right, Geordi, you can go do whatever you want. But the first sign of trouble, you come tell me. And then he proceeds to have every sign of trouble possible before even solving it.
I didn't like that his transformation takes like a third of the time of the woman's. That was kind of weird. I mean, I guess at that point you got to wrap it up. But
we've already seen it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Crusher. Her hairdresser must have been off that day because her hair is out of control in this episode.
They had to focus on Nurse Okagawa, I think, as well. She's in this.
Yeah.
This is a very heavy Crusher episode. She gets a lot of play in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's doing surgery. She's operating on the thing. She's pulling out the parasites. it's weird that there's no... I like the episode. It's weird that it feels very disconnected.
to me. Like, every scene sort of feels disconnected. There's not a lot of importance put on the parasite that's apparently infected these people. Picard sort of nonchalant's like, well, we'll leave a sign saying not to go down to this planet, and then he walks off. That's very weird to me.
It's like at the end of the Simpsons episode where Bart falls down the well, and Mayor Quimby is like, don't worry, we're taking every precaution, and the last shot is Willie just hammering a sign and then says, caution, well.
And Willie says, that ought to do it or something.
Yeah.
And
walks
off. Yeah. That's exactly what the what this one was. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, is this
Oh, and also – so, okay. So my problems with this episode, I think, just mainly come from the end. And I think the problem – stems from the fact that I understand why they chose to turn Geordi into the monster, because it makes more sense, because you're going to care about Geordi.
Right.
But realistically, it should have been Geordi saving the woman.
Yes.
That the failure to do that makes the last end of it not make a lot of sense. I shouldn't say make sense, but it's just... It's really rushed,
her connecting with him, it has nothing to do with anything that's happened previously in the episode.
Right. The only reason that they solve the problem is because they turn her back into a human, and she wakes up and she has
knows, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a Borg level knowledge of the entire species, which is there's nothing to implicate that might be the case beforehand.
Right.
So the thing I think about this, and it's gonna get I'm gonna get heady for a second here.
Sure, but, please.
So Clay and I have been watching Making a Murderer on Netflix.
Did you finish it yet?
I did. I just finished it today, and I was rewatching this episode, and I thought, man, if they only had a holodeck to reenact, every courtroom scene.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was a kid, anytime there was a courtroom scene, it would be like boring. You couldn't stand it.
Right.
But as an adult, like it's the most exciting thing ever because someone's on trial for murder. And I don't know. I think it's interesting because as a kid, if I watched this, I probably would think it was the worst episode ever. But as an adult, I can kind of give it kind of a nod for what it's attempting to do,
This entire episode or a particular part of it?
The idea, they take a lot of time
with
this CSI investigation, and it's for a science fiction show to go to like handheld camera and for Geordi to be like, where is this shadow from?
Right.
And pretend this alien is about my size, 1.7 meters.
Yep.
Yeah, you wish, Geordi.
There was
a lot of screen time. Stuff.
which is actually interesting if you think about it, because I mean, a lot of those cop shows now do this stuff. Like, I remember I was watching Law & Order SVU in one of the last handful of seasons in the last 5 years or so, and they actually had a CGI reconstruction of the crime scene that they could use to – they could have 360 movement, and they could use it to plot the angles of bullets and stuff, and that's basically what Geordi's doing. Which is why it's a shame that all of – like, it doesn't matter.
Right,
You know? Yeah. Like, if he had done that and he had figured it out and he had solved the problem, then that would have been fantastic.
They're 0-2 doing it. I think this episode, Matter of Perspective, is even worse, and it's an even better use of the holodeck in that episode, which makes it like it's. If I could redo one Star Trek episode, it would be Matter of Perspective. But this one is not nearly as bad. It's just I think they get the tone right about it in this one. Like it's. It reminds me of the movie Descent for some reason. You know that movie?
Oh,
the horror movie where they go underground and there's like little monsters underground. For some reason, it reminds me of that. I don't know why, but I feel like the tone is a good horror hit on it.
Right. I think it's a good first draft.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say, I also don't like that they find him because Data has to reinvent the blacklight.
Yeah. That's. I don't know why
the Enterprise has no UV scanners on it.
I don't know why they showed him making it like it was some sort of revelation that he took a blue bit of tape and stuck it over the front of a flashlight and was like, here's a UV light.
I mean, if they had showed him going into O'Brien's room and pulling it down off the wall above the Led Zeppelin poster, I would have been better with that.
That was a weird scene in general. It felt like they were padding, or Michael Piller wanted to add scenes that made it feel more Next Generation. Like, we watch Data build this, right? Riker's asking him, like, how long is this going to take? It's all very pointless to the narrative questions. Mm-hmm. And then Riker just gets pissy with Worf for no reason. About, like, he's asking Worf what they're doing, and Worf's explaining it. And Riker's like, Geordi doesn't have 4 hours, you fucking moron. And then walks off. And it's like, why is Riker so pissed off about this? It doesn't make any sense within the narrative we've been
telling. I don't know why he... I agree. I don't know why he cares about Geordi at all. Sincerely, I don't know why he cares.
Cares deeply. Deeply. It's a... poor identity crisis. I wish this one had amounted to something a little bit better. It's it's an interesting take.
Can I float a question out to you guys?
Yeah, please.
So, talking about this, in the previous episode, we talked about Troy. Do you think if you were making a new Star Trek, would you update the protocol? For example, how many times has Data saved the day? How many times has it been good that they've had a Betazoid? And when the Crusher tells Geordi, just let me know if you feel any symptoms. No, he should be locked down, because how do you know an alien hasn't invaded his mind? So what I'm asking is, I feel like they need to tighten up the protocol on the ship of what's allowed. I feel like every starship should have a Betazoid. Everyone should have a Data, because look at how many times it saved their asses, you know?
Yeah.
I would agree with you. Because, I mean, there's that scene in this one where they're like, Geordi, you should really be under wraps and under quarantine. It's like, well, then I can't work at a computer and I can't figure it out. Again, my girlfriend said, yeah, it's too bad they don't have laptops.
Right.
But they have tablets,
apparently.
And the reason, obviously, is so he can go off and solve the problem and everything. But it made me think of a great episode of House where Omar Epps' character he catches this deadly disease. And so they have to quarantine him. But House isn't around or he's doing some other shit. So Omar Epps has to figure out – he basically has to be House, but he has to be better than House because he has to do it while he's quarantined. Sure. And he has to diagnose himself. And it's a really good episode. And, I mean, it obviously you wouldn't get the holodeck stuff, but there's a lot of – you know, there's a lot of story in there that you could play with. So it's not a – it's definitely something that probably, at least story-wise, they could do. It makes a lot of sense.
Right? Yeah. That's true. I think the main thing here is really – there's no grounding to the Geordi character here. You know what I mean? It's like this story could happen to anybody on the Enterprise except for Data, probably. You know, there's no reason why this is Geordi's story, I guess.
Well, except that it's he actually transforms into a giant creep.
Yeah, that's besides that, he has no link to the narrative, which I think is a problem more than it's ever been before. You can kind of get away with it, I think, sometimes with it's more of a mystery. But it feels weird to bring back, like, friends of yours and have them be so not important to what goes on in the story.
Mm-hmm.
That just felt very, very odd to me.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. Do you guys think it would have worked better if it had been Crusher who was – figuring all this stuff out, like if it had been Crusher who was in the holodeck?
It could have been Crusher, but she did have an episode with her mentor, Doctor, who disappeared.
Yep.
But to take Clay's point, if this was Worf, if you met a friend of Worf's from training that he was very chummy with, yep. And you got to, it really opened up your eyes to, like, oh man, I guess Worf would have had friends when he was training at Starfleet Academy. Like, huh, what would those friends be like? Like, you would have got a lot of good insight into Worf, and I feel like that would have been better spent on him than on Geordi. And the fact that she's an attractive lady brought up other concerns for me.
Yes.
Like, why isn't Geordi hitting on her?
Right. Well, why is he not scared? Yeah, at this. Yeah, right. I agree. I don't know if I'd go with Worf. I wonder. I could see it being a Riker story. I guess what we're getting at is, like, it could really be anybody's, and you just kind of mold it to whatever character it actually turns out to be.
Well, I guess I was thinking when I said what about Crusher, I guess I was thinking that you say that Geordi is sort of disconnected from the narrative. That, well, then why does he need to be? So, like, if Crusher was the person doing all of the thinking, you could still have Geordi and Geordi's friend But, you know, they're both coming down with the sickness, so Crusher has to do the critical thinking. So then it wouldn't feel as much as, like, you know what I mean? So yeah, she would be an impartial party to begin with.
Right, yeah, yeah. And Geordi's just sort of a secondary character that this is happening to.
Yeah.
Which kind of fits with his MO at this point.
And that way you could have...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in that way, you could have had more scenes with Geordi and his friend, where maybe you get some more character stuff out of them, you know? And then the end makes more sense, where one of them has to talk the other one down.
I liked how they didn't even try to rescue his other friends. They're just like, yeah, they're dead. Don't worry about that.
No, they're done. They're gone.
Can I say, Geordi and his friend sounds like the best band name ever.
Geordi's little friend.
Oh, here's a question. So when they bring him back to the ship, they give him his visor back. Does that mean he could see as a monster?
That's a good question. He didn't have it on.
Yeah.
I imagine he – I guess at that point you're so overwritten with DNA like his friends were that you just don't need – you don't need them. I really loved the yellow eye effect. I thought that was really cool, actually. I'm glad they didn't have him. I'm glad that he wasn't continuing to wear his visor, although I'm surprised they – I was expecting it's always that kind of a scene where they beam down to the planet and they find his visor, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like the last remnant of him being human.
Well, they did that, though. They did it with his uniform.
With his uniform, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the holodeck. And why was the uniform, like, burnt? I didn't understand any of the burnt uniforms that we were having to look at.
It was the only one they had in storage for the shot.
Yeah, I don't know.
My other minor quibble is... did anyone find it odd that when they beamed down to the planet and that shuttlecraft that was there for a long time, the doors were open, the lights were still on it? the batteries on these things must just last forever. It's impressive.
Well, it's not a Honda. I mean, it's a space vehicle. I mean, maybe it would be on forever. I don't know.
Why didn't they bother? Why didn't they bother turning it off? Well, did you guys like this one more or less than Night Terrors?
I'll let Clay go first.
I'm gonna say probably a little less. I don't know. I just the ending was just so, like, way too convenient.
Yeah.
And I gotta stop talking to you guys before I watch these episodes, because all I could think of was, like, oh, Geordi, he sucks. And it's starting to cloud my judgment. Like, I'm not paying as close attention because, oh, Geordi, he's a blowjob. I don't need to listen to that guy.
Yeah, that's I actually find – I found it the opposite, because it was like we were saying in the previous episode. I remembered Night Terrors being worse than it actually is. Mm-hmm. I remembered this one being much worse than I think it actually is. It's like you were saying, Sean. There's ones I look at the blurb, and it's like the picture on the blurb, and I'm just like, ooh. Not into that one. I do not want to deal with that. And it's too bad, because I think there are a couple that I might not have... I'm not saying this is a great episode, but I think when I was younger watching them, I didn't really appreciate some of the ones that are better than I remember them being.
Right.
Yeah.
I hear you there. But I would say that so with Night Terrors, I thought that was worse than it was. So, mea culpa. But on this one, it was as bad as I pretty much remembered it being.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's a tough one. I'm going to we'll wrap this one up. I'm going to go to final thoughts. We're going to play an audio clip. We'll come back, give our final rating, which we've already kind of hinted at, and give final thoughts.
Wait, when you do a fight video, when you do a thing, can you have Geordi say, "Computer, please delete Geordi"?
Sure, that'll be our sign off. So listen to Geordi say, "Computer, delete Geordi," and we'll be back in a second.
Computer, remove LaForge. And now remove Lighten. And now remove Mendez.
Guys, let's give a rating to Identity Crisis. Is this a good title for this episode?
No.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a terrible title.
One of them. I mean, I thought we gave up on expecting them to have good titles at this point.
I don't know what it is. Night Terrors is okay. You know, I can say that to be the Nth Degree is our next episode. That's a pretty good title. Identity Crisis just has nothing to do with anything, because it's skirting the edge of what the Identity Crisis is in this episode.
I mean, yeah, I mean, if you really want to get picky about it, I guess there's an Identity Crisis at the very end.
Yes.
When she's like, Geordi, you should come back to the ship. And he's looking all confused.
You're
and
still that's, human. That's, You're yeah. still a man. Sean, give us a rating 1 to 5. What you think about this one?
All right. I'm going to go 2. If I could do a high 2, I would. But I don't. This isn't anything I'd recommend. I don't think it's completely terrible. But it's just, I don't know. It's nice that it's the Brendan's first attempt to do a solo script. And I like the idea of the holodeck as a crime scene investigation tool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't go any higher than a 2, 2.5. Clay?
Yeah, I would probably say the same. Because do they ever do the holodeck crime scene thing again or anything like that?
Yes, they do.
Okay, and, yeah. Then because otherwise, I was going to say if they never really do that again, you should watch it just because it's an interesting concept. But if they do it again and they do it better, then I would say 2. And I was going to say earlier, I agree with you, Sean. I love monster stuff, but in this, it does not work.
In Star Trek or in this episode?
In this episode specifically, because yeah, once you start thinking this is not a fantasy show,
yeah.
Well. You know, you know what I mean. It is a fantasy, but you know what I mean.
This is the same stuff, Clay. It's okay. Yeah.
Well,
you don't need to back
that. And so when you have somebody who is turning into, like, physically turning into another creature, like you get those shots of the woman on the bed, and she's like, clearly her facial features and bone structure have mutated into something else.
Yep.
For her to just snap back after that is completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing. Like, at least they gave Picard a scene after he got turned into a Borg or turned back from a Borg where he, like, kind of looked like he was still fucked up.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, but that didn't involve changing, like, the bone structure of his face.
Right.
Where, just, you know, and, yeah. like, Geordi, he should be like, I don't even know how you come back from that shit. Like, what do they do? Does it
kill them off.
Yeah, does it like crack like an egg and you just come out and you're fine, or like what? I don't know. It just seems like for a show that's so sciencey based, something like that should have a little bit more weight to it instead of just well, it's the end of the episode, we have to go back to the way it was.
Yeah, he'll revert back.
I don't mind monster stuff. I don't like when humans turn into monsters very quickly. Like I have a hard time getting bored with the science behind that, which is what you're saying.
Yeah, like in the scene where he's in the hall, I couldn't get behind how quickly it was happening to Geordi. Because if you're actively moving around and doing stuff and being productive, your hands should not have the opportunity to grow your fingers together without you realizing it until after it's happened.
Exactly. You'd certainly notice it as it was happening.
If that happens when you're already laying down because you got, you know, it's already you knocked you out or whatever, that's fine. But if you're actively using your hands, you can't just, you know, be carrying a box spread fingered in one shot and then look down and your hands are glued together in this next shot.
I agree.
I know that might be that. I might be getting really, really picky about that, but I don't know. It's just a believability thing.
If he's wearing gloves, suddenly the gloves rip, and he looks down, and he only has 3 fingers. They're really long.
He's not wearing gloves at all. He's wearing mittens now. Oh my god!
Yeah, and to have this sort of physical change really not have any
impact.
Like,
yeah,
or just the only time. Like, all he does is, like, grab the back of his neck, and it's like, oh, yeah, we know that he has blue veins there because the other lady – like, it's not painful.
Yeah.
It's not – something like that should be – what it should have been – now, I'm going to stay on my soapbox here for a second.
American werewolf.
No, it should have been the fly because the whole middle section of the fly is Jeff Goldblum slowly turning into the fly while he's doing all of these experiments trying to figure out how to turn back into a human.
Yep.
And that's why they should have done it.
It's funny. I had a feeling Clay was going to bring up the fly. and I was right.
and then this woman would make sense as the why can't I think of the actress's name in the fly?
Gina Davis.
Gina Davis. Well, she would be that role in this
and
one.
Riker could be the Stathis Bourne character.
And Geordi would just hold a shotgun to his head at the very end. Kill me. Please kill me. I should watch The Fly. I haven't watched The Fly in a long time.
It's so good.
It is good. Grundlefly, right? Yeah, Grundlefly.
Brundle, yeah, Grundlefly. Seth Brundle.
Brundle, that's right. It's a good name. I'm going to give this one a 3. I think it's pretty average. I don't have as big of a problem with it, I think, as you guys. I don't think it really holds together all that well in terms of narrative. It's clearly just high concept being sort of strung along. It's a low 3 where Night Terrors was a high 3, and that's what I'll give it.
Yeah,
can I ask you guys how you define high concept?
You could say the plot in a sentence.
Okay.
Geordi turns into
Clay,
a monster.
What's high concept, Clay?
As far as this show goes, it's usually something that's more of a thought exercise for me. Okay. You know, like the what is it, cause and effect, where the ship keeps blowing up.
Yep.
It's like that. Right. That sort of stuff is at, like, you know, it kind of makes you work through the problem a little bit, and is a thought exercise that you wouldn't really do in your day to day life unless you're have mastery over the space time continuum.
I think they also tend to have a bit of a detachment from the characters in high concept episodes.
Yeah.
Right. It's never character work. It's always just something has happened.
Yeah, they're generally more science fictiony.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I agree. No, I use that phrase a lot, and I sometimes feel like I overuse it. I'm not sure what it means anymore, but I know it when I see it. It's kind of one of those things.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It's like porn. I agree with the definitions. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, I wanted to go out with, let's give a 5-minute description here of how you guys, Clay Gummy, started. What is the difference between science fiction and fantasy in, like, the gritty details?
Oh, man. Oh, damn it. I just listened to a podcast where someone really gave a good description of what the difference was. Shit. You guys talk first.
Why I asked this. I hate fantasy, but I love sci-fi. And when I try to understand what the difference is, I sometimes have a very hard time rationalizing why I feel that way.
Right. I agree with you, Wes. I'd be curious to hear what Clay thinks, because I bet he's given this more thought, and I haven't heard this podcast. I don't like fantasy because fantasy has magic in it and dreams, and I hate that shit. I like sci-fi because it tries to tether itself down to facts and reality and science.
Yep.
And there's a sci-fi script is mostly real and plausible with one outlying factor, like a twist. Like, oh, and this guy can fly. But everything else is basically very real. And with fantasy, it's all up for grabs. And I don't like I can't enjoy those plots because I feel like when you have magic, there's nothing at stake. When characters die and come back to life, and I don't know, like, there's not enough of a rule book for me personally.
Right. I mean, my thing with fantasy, which I'll tie into the sci-fi, is my problem is I always like writing. I think it's my favorite thing to look at and all this stuff. Fantasy writing to me feels like, not to say that Lord of the Rings isn't a great book and people enjoy it, but I feel like what happens in Lord of the Rings is someone goes, oh, we've come upon this thing. Oh, well, we have to climb the mountain of blah, blah, blah and get this thing that'll open the thing of this, that thing that we found. It's like everything feels like there's no rational reason why things are connecting the way that they are. It's just kind of like an adventure after an adventure after an adventure.
It's very mythological. It's like you're reading a passage out of a Bible. You just have to accept it because this is fantasy and that's what fantasy does. But they're obsessed with, like, proper names of, like, the Orc of Ice Dick Dildoism. It's just like these fucking things that you don't even need to know. But
the problem is that sci-fi and Star Trek occasionally veers into that territory when they sometimes just make shit up technobabble to explain away a situation. But for some reason, I find that more forgivable, even though I don't know that there's much of a difference between the two.
Right.
I think if I remember correctly, I could be remembering it wrong, but I think part of the definition that the other podcast I was listening to made was that fantasy tends to be more emotional, whereas science fiction, I guess you'd just say science fiction, tends to be more analytical and clinical. And And I think that's true. I think you guys are generalizing on the fantasy thing a bit, but I understand what you're saying. Like, because I like that. I love all that stuff up to a point. You know, like you couldn't pay me to read, you know, 13 fantasy books that are all 800,000 pages. Yeah. But I mean, Star Wars is a fantasy story. It's not a sci-fi story, and I love Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's digestible in 90 minutes, but how many sci-fi novels have you read?
A handful.
If Star Wars is fantasy, you wouldn't have read that. Star Wars is Lord of the Rings in space. So
yeah, that's interesting. Cell.
It's like a 90-minute digestible, marketable thing. They cut the fat and they made it good.
For some reason, I feel that.
Yeah, I don't know what your point is.
Sorry. Shut up, Clay.
Because I mean, how many sci-fi books have you read? Well, Star Trek: The Next Generation is just iRobot in television form. It's like.
First of all, my point is that you're a douche, and you proved it.
Well,
that reminds me.
Go ahead, Clay.
I want Wes, finish your point, and then I wanted to bring up because Sean did mention that he wanted to talk about shit. Why can't I remember his name? Tyson.
Oh yeah, I'll let you close with that. So my final point would be, I wouldn't want to read sci-fi novels. But I don't mind. Well, it's not that I don't mind. I'm not attracted to sci-fi in novelization form. For some reason, I feel like it's a movie or TV show genre.
Right.
Yeah. Fuck you, Sean.
I agree with that.
Fantasy is the opposite. Fantasy, I think, belongs. Fantasy is better in books, almost. And maybe that has to do with your emotional thing. Clay, where it's like reading.
Yeah, exactly, Clay. Fuck you.
No, I don't agree with that because I feel like a lot of those novels that you used as examples as far as, you know, how intricately they get into names and places and things. I feel like that's a lot of clinical stuff. Whereas if you have those stories in a movie form, it allows you to lean into the emotional aspects that much more. I could be completely wrong because I don't read a lot of fantasy books. I may be completely off base, but I've always felt. I mean, I don't want to read four chapters about different every family's flag and what they had for breakfast and all that kind of crazy shit, you know.
But I did read the Star Trek technical manual when I was a kid, like over and over again. So I don't know what it is. Are we all in agreement? Do we all prefer sci-fi over fantasy? Is that the breakdown?
I wouldn't say so. I think it really is. You know, I think it's
case by case.
Case by case. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I would definitely lean sci-fi. I think.
I like that this turned into a verbal brawl of some sorts.
Sci-fi rules and fantasy drools, nerds. Kick my way out.
Well, all right, so to clarify my point, I feel like any over when you have too many proper names and labels on things, it gets in the way of plot. And my writing background comes more from screenplays, which is brevity, which is, you know, make less mean more, and when you have novelization of anything, you can just go off for three chapters on how pretty a tree is. So I guess, yeah, my thing against fantasy is that it seems to indulge too much in that sort of behavior, whereas sci-fi, at least sci-fi I know, cuts the fat a bit more and gets to the point.
Yeah,
but maybe I'm only reading a certain type of sci-fi, I admit.
No, I'm just trying to think of the most epic sci-fi series that I can think of.
Well, so Clay made a good point I agree with this. Fantasy is more emotional. I was going to say fantasy is more kind of poetic and it's all about the artsy fartsiness of the world. But I think that's essentially what Clay is saying, which I do agree with. But I still think that Clay is a douchebag.
I agree.
Well, I don't even think it's down to an artsy fartsy kind of thing, because I mean, if you like Game of Thrones is not an artsy fartsy kind of thing. That's just brutal killing and fucking for
Yeah, but that is. But I think it indulges in that, you know, as opposed to. It's funny. Game of Thrones is so much plot, but it's a lot of. Like, he really is in the sort of details of it, if that makes sense.
Well, I agree. And I think that Game of Thrones is a very good example of fantasy that I like because it does cut the fat and it doesn't indulge in these weird names of far-off places.
Yeah.
Well, I can't say because I haven't read the books, but I mean, like, if you grab any Forgotten Realms or Dragonlance or whatever, it's just, there's just chapters and chapters that any director of a movie would just cut because it just doesn't mean anything, you know? Right. It's just way too artsy-fartsy. And that's, maybe artsy-fartsy isn't the right way to describe it.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
We're all in agreement. Sean,
you're not a bitch anymore. I take it back, Clay.
We're shaking hands over Skype. Anyway, Sean, give us a couple, 2 minutes of what you thought about Tyson. You want us to talk about him?
Oh, man.
Neil deGrasse.
Okay. I'm a massive Carl Sagan fan, and when I watch the new Cosmos, I mean, anybody that teaches science and tries to help the species in the right way, you can't really fault them. But I do often wonder about the difference between Neil deGrasse Tyson's delivery and Carl Sagan's delivery. And I listen to a lot of Tyson's podcasts, the Star Talk stuff, and I like him, but I feel like he could use some acting or some speech lessons or something, some pacing, because he just comes across as very goofy sometimes. And I think it misses, it doesn't have as much effect as when Carl Sagan used to do it.
Yeah, there's a gravitas, I think.
Well, what's interesting is it's interesting we're having this general conversation because what I think sparked the Neil deGrasse Tyson thing was last episode I said that I can't stand it when he talks about movies. And there are some movies that I completely, absolutely would be interested to hear him talk about. Like, do I want to hear his thoughts about Gravity or The Martian? Absolutely. But do I want to hear his thoughts about Star Wars? No. And I guess maybe that's the best way. Maybe that's the best way to define
sci-fi.
What's sci-fi and fantasy is. Do I care what Neil deGrasse Tyson has to say about it?
Tysonometer is through the roof here.
It might actually work. We'll start tweeting at him.
Yeah, he was doing this tweeting and like he was talking about how BB-8 could never work in the real world because he's on sand and he would be sliding all over the place. Like, who gives a fuck? Who gives a shit? I don't care about that. In the Martian, I care about that, but I don't care about it in a story that has giant talking dogs and lightsabers.
They should just have Tyson do like director's commentary for every single fantasy movie that comes out. Just have him just sitting there just with the director or whatever talking about it. I think that would work.
Right.
It probably would work where you'd care what he actually thought in a sci-fi thing. It's funny.
Well, his call is, you know, director of the Hayden Planetarium, and he is employed in educational capacity. So if you hung out with him over a glass of wine and you got him to really talk, I bet he would tell you that he feels a need to sort of inject science into popular fiction just to move the science-o-meter closer to where it needs to be. So he does think he's doing a public service, but Clay's looking at it from a storytelling point of view, whereas, fuck you, you don't understand BB-8. Go shave your mustache and fuck yourself. So I can see Clay's point, because sometimes it's just you want to hit the mute button.
That is a direct quote.
It's the funny thing about Twitter where really just too much of anybody will turn you against them. You know what I mean? Like if you could really agree with somebody, if they just are, you know, if you're on Twitter and they're like the only person you followed on Twitter, you'd probably lose any sort of like goodwill towards that person after a while. I'd be like, wow, that's I need to be balanced out with a couple other things. So follow me on Twitter at that Penske file, you motherfuckers, and unfollow everybody else. Guys, thank you very much.
How many Twitter followers do you have, Wes?
250. Is this some kind of dick contest, a dick measurement contest here, Sean? How many do you have?
I was just curious. Clay, how many do you have?
I don't keep track of that shit, man. People come into my life and they go out of my life, and you know, it's all cool for the time that they're there.
You have one less right now, my friend.
No, it's Are we past peak Twitter?
I think we're into the point where Twitter is now you're getting a lot of sludge where stuff just goes bad very quickly.
Do you think everyone who signed up and uses a Twitter account is on Twitter and you're not really going to get any sort of new blood into it?
That's interesting.
I don't know. Tactically is the right word, but when you start giving people in poor countries third generation cell phones and they have access to Twitter, then technically no. There's a lot of people that aren't on that will get on, but I know what you're saying, though.
People that I would follow, I guess. Yeah, like it feels to me like it's at as big as it could possibly
Right. get. And 2015 is the outrage year of Twitter. It's when Twitter became an outrage machine.
And I remember like a couple of years ago when I first got on Twitter, it was like every day was like a new thing, kind of. And it ceased to be that at this point. And I think it's the way it is. And everyone will get upset. Yeah. I enjoy reading some of the replies to you, Sean, the things that you tweet. And I enjoy reading the people who reply to them.
Dude, honestly, I've backed it off a lot in the last few years. And because I've learned that if you don't have anything to gain, then why post it? It's good for advertising.
You guys,
yes.
You guys both are going to get fucked by the fantasy crowd when this thing comes out.
Hashtag. We'll come up with something. I wish. I hope that they do. You know, I hope they follow me on my Twitter.
I remember when I used to read Dragonlance novels. I went to the store, and in the early 90s is when they started to separate the fantasy novels from the sci-fi. And I remember asking, "What the fuck's the difference?" And it's still a good question to be honest. Like my wife asks me, "Like how is Twilight not fantasy?" And I'm like, "I have no idea."
Wait, what?
Twilight's in the
Twilight's
sci-fi
not
section?
Fantasy?
No, it's not. It's in it. There's so many little subgenres. Silly, but technically sci-fi. I'm sure other people would define it differently. But you would call it like vampire eroticism. I don't know.
You bet.
Sean's bookshelf.
You absolutely bet I would.
This is why terrorists want to blow us up. These are first world problems. It's ridiculous that we have to have too many bookshelves.
We got too many categories. Too many categories in the
exactly.
And that's the way it is. Well, thank you guys for coming on. That was a good talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll,
good sidebar.
Good sidebar. Guys, thank you very much for listening. If you're on YouTube, a like and a comment. Appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review helps get the show out there.
I'm going to follow our argument on our new podcast, Fantasy versus Sci-Fi.
Every week.
Let me put this out there.
Every week.
Hey, everyone who likes fantasy, fuck you. And please respond to me on Twitter and let's see what happens.
We'll call it sci-fi or fantasy, and we'll bring on something like, we'll be like Bill James Sabermetrics. Is this sci-fi or is this fantasy? And we will debate whether or not it is one or the other. It has to fit into something. I'm going to be back in a couple days with The Nth Degree, which is a Barkley episode. So everyone look forward to that. Thank you guys very much. Thank you guys again for coming on.
And yeah, thank you.
We will see you later.